Hi, you're listening to Record of Change. My name is Stephanie Rabel, and I'm your host for this episode. Record of Change features the stories of individuals from across the world of how their lives are being shaped by the COVID-19 pandemic. We listen to our interviewees at several points in time because we want to follow how their lives are changing. I'm speaking to you from Delaware in the United States. Everything here is eerily normal this summer. Well, as normal as it can be, since, let's say, the start of the pandemic. When I go into stores, I would say that a good number of people are maskless. In fact, I would say sometimes the majority of people are maskless, although me personally, I'm still wearing a mask. And sometimes it even gets a second look. Here, things are open. Restaurants are open. The summer is happening. Folks are traveling all over. And it's been a really pleasant summer so far, and I say that in a very tentative way because there's still a lot of loose ends happening and a lot of things that are yet to be determined. But I would say, generally speaking, spirits are high. And today we're actually going to hear from someone who I would say is in that camp as well. Today we'll hear from Dr. Catherine Corden of Washington, D.C. She's a trained civil engineer, researcher, transport expert who decided that her way to cope with the pandemic was to moonlight as a COVID-19 testing site worker. If you didn't hear her first episode back in season 3, hop back and listen. It's fascinating. She talks about her decision to join the front line, what it's like to do work at a testing center, and what it was like to witness the events of January 6th of 2021 in downtown Washington, D.C. while she was at the testing center. So I highly recommend do go check out that episode. In this second episode with Catherine, we're going to talk with her actually just after her last day on the front line. She's speaking to us from her original hometown, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and we'll hear what happened to her over the last 5.5 months. We'll get to hear some stories from her switching from working on a mass COVID-19 testing site over to helping with mass vaccination efforts, and get to hear a little bit about her hopes for working and life in a hopefully post-pandemic world. Catherine, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Glad to be here with you.
Last we spoke with you, we caught you in between the two doses and you're anticipating the second one. Hopefully everything went well. You were working full-time in your regular job and also putting in an early morning shift in Washington, D.C. at a COVID-19 testing center. So it's now 5.5 months later. What changes have you seen at the testing site specifically?
Well, your timing on this interview is fantastic because Friday, July 2nd, was the last day of mass testing in the District of Columbia. So that was our last day that we were in operations. And as of this coming week, we are no longer offering mass testing. There's still some testing available throughout the city. There's still a test yourself program where you can pick up a test kit at a lot of the city libraries, at a lot of the different branches, 16 of the branches all around the city. And then swab yourself and drop the test back off in what are repurposed ballot boxes, actually.
Wow.
So they're making good use of all of the boxes that they got for last year's election. So that is going to be the city-provided testing option going forward, at least for the foreseeable future. Those are the test-yourself option is supposed to run it through the summer. They haven't set a specific end date. But the big mass testing sites ended as of July 2nd. So we had definitely seen a decrease in volumes of people coming to get tested. By far, the heaviest volumes were between about mid-November and mid-December. That was just bananas. As people were getting tested, we had hours-long lines testing 1,000 people a day at all the different sites. It was lots and lots of testing. Toward the end, we were testing perhaps 100 people a day. Over the course of the several hour shifts, we were open for about 5 hours a day. So we would test maybe 100 people. We had a lot of free time. So that was fine. We did a lot of crossword puzzles toward the end. But still heartening to be doing it. Toward the end, it seemed that we were testing more people for travel, people who may or may not have been vaccinated, but who needed specifically to have a PCR test that said that they had tested negative within the last 72 hours so that they could go wherever they were going. So though the travelers became a significant proportion of the people who were coming through to get tested, not people who thought that they had any kind of exposure, but people who just needed the negative test for often travel, but sometimes to go back to school or for a variety of other reasons. So those who were in danger of having been exposed became a significantly smaller portion of those who were being tested.
And I'm assuming that a lot of your colleagues at this point are also vaccinated themselves. What was the shift in attitude from January through now?
At least on a personal level, there was a definite sense of relief. I no longer felt my blood pressure go up quite as high when I'd see somebody wearing a mask inappropriately, or when I saw somebody's nose and they were doing the "I'm pretending to wear a mask, but not actually wearing it properly" thing. So it was nice to feel a slight sense of relief that those people were no longer endangering me. There was also definitely a sense of relief just in general among all of those of us who were working there, that once we were vaccinated, we felt much more confident doing the job, that we were a lot less likely to be in danger ourselves. There's clearly a significant overlap between the people who were coming to get tested, especially those coming to get tested regularly, and the people who are getting vaccinated. So while there are plenty of people who are not vaccinated, DC is a pretty heavily vaccinated place, relatively speaking, but still there are lots of people who aren't vaccinated. But those are not the people who are coming to get tested anyway. So the people who have been vaccinated now are generally did not show up for tests, at least nearly as frequently. We still had some regulars who had been vaccinated but still came back to be tested frequently. But for the most part, as the vaccinations ramped up, the testing went down, which makes a lot of sense. And there are just a lot, there's a significant portion of the district population that we never saw either for testing or for vaccinations. I was also doing vaccinations for the last 2 months or so. I got to, as I keep saying, fight the pandemic from both ends, which was also very satisfying. It was really, really easy to take for granted the fact that, okay, you are the 800th person that we've gotten through the vaccination site. It was a mass site at the convention center. So there were lots of people coming through, and it was very easy to take for granted that, all right, you're just another person coming through to get vaccinated. We've la-di-da, we've all been vaccinated. We know how this works. Here's just another piece of the puzzle. But it was helpful to remember that every single person who was coming to get vaccinated, this was a really big day for them. This was their vaccination that many of them had been waiting for months. And so while they were just one more person among hundreds for us, it was a really important, exciting day for a lot of these people. When I would wish many of them happy vaccination day, the grins that I would get in response were just great. You could see it through the mask, over the mask. People were so excited.
Having the ability to be on the vaccination side as well, do you have any stories that stick out?
One of the memories that still makes me laugh a little, somebody came to our testing site toward the end, within the last month, and was looking for vaccinations. We often had people come to the testing site thinking that we were offering vaccinations there and we'd have to direct them somewhere where they were actually offering vaccinations. So we had an older man come. He came to the testing site looking for a vaccination, and we were trying to direct him to the right place. So we asked him what his first, he'd already gotten one shot. So we asked what his first shot was so that we could direct him to a place that was offering the same shots for the second shots. And when we found out that he'd gotten the Moderna shot, we were hunting down which places were offering walk-in options for Moderna that day. And he stopped us right there and told us that he did not want a second Moderna shot. Anybody with a lick of sense knew that you did not get the same shot twice. What he was looking for was the Pfizer. And we all paused and went, what? And after a moment, we figured out that he was looking for a Pfizer shot, but he kept saying that he needed Pfizer. And so we eventually we smiled and nodded a lot and eventually directed him to a place that was offering the Moderna second shots in the hopes that he would actually get what he needed when he got there. But he may have been prescient and he may have been smarter than all of us, because some of the facts now seem to indicate that mixing the doses is not such a bad thing, that it might actually provide a lot of benefits, especially if you're mixing an mRNA vaccine with a non-mRNA vaccine. So I'll be very curious to see the data as that comes out. But I will definitely always remember the man somewhat confused, but shuffling up and looking for Pfizer.
That's adorable. And he was way ahead of his time, too. I mean,
very much so. He thought we were idiots for telling him he needed a second Moderna. He truly thought we were just off our gourds, but he may have been right.
I mean, maybe he thinks that the vaccine card was like a collect all of them. Like you just get a check mark, Moderna check, Pfizer check.
Well, we did have somebody come into the vaccine site at one point. I just confirmed, as I did with everybody, you're here to be vaccinated, right? And he said, well, I've already been vaccinated, but I need to be vaccinated again because I lost my card. I said, oh, well, that's okay. Let's see if we can get you a new card, but we're not going to give you a third shot. So we did end up being able to track down his information. And so we were able to get that information for him. He just was happy to get vaccinated again because he had lost his card.
Oh my goodness. Again, who knows? Maybe he's also ahead of his time. I mean, we're all going to need boosters, but maybe he's like, just more immunity. That's how it works. Just get a new card. Oh, that's funny.
Well, the first weekend that shots were available for the 12 to 15-year-olds that we were offering Pfizer shots or Pfizer shots, that was a very busy afternoon at the convention center for those shots. I think they were taken aback by the number of people coming to get vaccinated that day because it was walk-in, so there weren't appointments and they didn't really know how many people were going to be there on any given day. And it had been slowing down, so they had decreased the number of nurses who were there to actually provide the vaccines, but then the 12 to 15-year-olds became available and suddenly we had, on that Friday in particular, Fridays were very busy days for vaccinations because I think people had heard about the potential side effects and they wanted to get their shots on Fridays so that they could have a weekend to recover. But that we had so many preteens and their families coming in that day, and they were wildly understaffed on the nurses because they were surprised by the volumes. So we had these very long lines of people coming through, and I would just, every half an hour or so, I would just walk up and down the line offering lollipops to everybody. I can't speed this up. I can't fix this. I'm sorry you're waiting, but have some sugar. And the number of people who took lollipops, grown-ups, little kids, the lollipops were astoundingly popular. It made a lot of people smile and it did not fix the weights that people were facing. But I like to think that it made the weight a little more tolerable.
Oh, I can imagine that was just a lot of fun to see.
Yeah. This summer feels so different than last summer, that's for sure.
What would you say is your biggest takeaway from your work at the testing center? Is there anything that really stands out from you about your time, especially since presumably you're not going to probably see on the day-to-day the folks that you've been working with?
Correct. Some of them have become fairly good friends, so I imagine that they will definitely remain a part of my life, even though I didn't know who they were a little over a year ago. But it's nice to have those new people that are important to me that are now in my life. And one thing that has become very clear to me over the last year that I've been doing this is how much value I get personally, selfishly, out of doing something that has a very immediate, tangible benefit. The other job that I do, the one that all my education is based around, is with a research organization that provides recommendations to Congress and to other entities about policy and how to make the world better in the long run, essentially. And there's no question that some of the things that we do, the recommendations we can provide based on science, can really have an impact way down the road. But the impact is probably, in most cases, a decade away at best. You know, changes have to be made to policy, and then they have to be implemented. Then eventually somebody's life might be better because of the recommendations that we have made. But with the COVID testing and the vaccinations, that was immediate. There was a sense you were seeing the people that you were having an impact on. You were face to face with them. And you, at the end of the day, could clearly say, I did this today, and this many people's lives are a little bit better because of something that I did. And the immediate tangibility of that was really rewarding, especially given that my other job is less immediately gratifying.
So how do you want to bring that back into your life then? Do you have any ideas as to how you might want to bring that essence back into your life?
I don't know, but it's something I'm very much considering and trying to figure out. I've been sort of going nonstop until this last Friday when we finally finished, knowing that I was going to feel a little bit bereft to an extent. There's no question that the closing of the mass testing is very bittersweet. For me personally, I will miss having somewhere to go that's out of the house every day, for one thing, and miss getting to spend time with friends and others in person. Just the in-person interaction with other humans has meant a lot to me over this last year. And I'm a little concerned about losing that, even as things have opened up and we can see each other with a lot less fear now. But I don't know exactly how I'm going to replace it, replace the sense of immediate benefit that I'm providing to the world. I'm certainly thinking about it. I'm trying to figure out what other volunteer activities or what else I might do coming forward, but I don't have the answers yet.
When we spoke with you last, you were discussing some of your future aspirations for seeing friends and family again. So have you been able to do so? And when did you start unfolding a social life again?
There's no question that my social life has ticked up. I would argue that I've never been the most social, outgoing, extroverted person in the world, but it's definitely more than it was a year ago. I got my second shot at the very end of January. And so by the middle of February, I was fully vaccinated. I didn't know very many other people who were. Some of the other people that I was working with, all others who were on the front lines, were also highly vaccinated. So we felt a little sense of freedom. I remember I think it was late February, meeting a friend from the testing site for coffee. And the amazement that the freedom that that seemed to provide. We sat outside with our coffee, but we went to a little cafe that he'd been to before and I had wanted to try. And so we went and we got our coffee and we went for a walk. And at the end of it, when we were going our separate ways, we both looked at each other and thought, we can do this. And we hugged. And it was the first time that either of us had hugged somebody we don't live with for, you know, a very long time. And that really felt momentous. Some of the other folks at the testing site, one person had a birthday in April. And so we had a picnic out on the mall. So an outdoor picnic, but several of us who were vaccinated, we all met up and brought various things to eat and drink and saw each other in person without our masks in civilian clothing. And it was that also felt like a door was opening to the wider world. And there's an uncle died in April and he had had cancer. It was not COVID related. He'd had cancer and it was several years in coming. But the timing on his death, as much as it could have been good, I suppose it was good because it was at a point where enough people were vaccinated. Enough family members, and it's a big family, both sides of the family were large, but enough people were vaccinated that a month later, so in May, we were able to get together and have a memorial service and see family for the worst of reasons. But had it happened earlier in the pandemic, we wouldn't have been able to do that at all. So I am very grateful that he lasted as long as he did so that we could have that sort of closure from a memorial service and getting to see everybody again.
That is something that I hope we as a society acknowledge as we move forward. I feel like there's a lot of pressure on us right now to return to work, return to normalcy, but there are a lot of people that have had loss for various reasons during this time and because of protocol haven't been able to really have that closure. So yeah, absolutely. I can imagine for you and your family that it was at least some piece that you got to process within a certain length of time and also see each other, because there's also a celebration of life as well when you have that grieving process and you're able to see each other and to spend just a moment in time to celebrate the life of a loved one. So I'm glad that you and your family were able to do that, though.
I am as well. I'm very glad that it was going to happen. So I'm glad that it's happened when it did, so that we could pull that off.
So many offices across the country have had employees working from home, and they're now discussing their plans for this big return to work. Do you know what this looks like for you yet?
They've announced some plans. There's still some that's up in the air. As of now, we plan to be back in the offices, back to quote unquote normal in October. The first full week of October is when they intend for people to be back in the office. However, they have not yet set or told us what a new telework policy will be. And it's clear from all the surveys they've done and talking to my coworkers and such that there's a lot of demand, a lot of desire to have some sort of a fairly generous teleworking policy in place. So I don't know how many people are likely to be in the office on any given day. I work for the National Academy of Sciences, and so they have made a point of trying to have science guide all of the decisions that they have been making. So their decision that I am most excited about is that they're going to require that if you work in the office, if you spend significant amounts of time in the office, more than just coming in for a meeting, you must be vaccinated. And there will really be no exceptions for that. There's the potential to have, I suppose, the occasional medical exemption that you will have to apply for. But for the most part, if you're coming back into the office, as they expect us to do, you need to be vaccinated. And I am thrilled that that is the policy that they have put into place. I think that that is following the science. I think also that if you work for the National Academy of Sciences and you are unwilling to adhere to current scientific best practices or unwilling to trust the vaccines, it's the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine. And the National Academy of Medicine has been heavily involved in doing a lot of work with this pandemic and planning for a future that is hopefully pandemic-free. If you work for us, but are unwilling to take the work that we are doing seriously, the work to end this pandemic, don't come to the office. It's fine with me.
So hearing a little bit about what your current work is looking like, what do you hope will be different from the pre-COVID times? What do you hope will be the same?
I don't think I'm unique in this at all, but one thing that has been kind of sort of nice over the last year and a half is not scheduling yourself out so much, such that if you wanted to see a friend, either in person or over the last 18 months via Zoom, that you had to both open up your calendars and try to find a Tuesday that's 3 weeks out when you both happen to be free and then hope that nothing comes up for either of you. The increased flexibility and the ability to be more spontaneous in your movements, to not be so booked all the time, that part is appealing. I imagine that I will probably end up eventually going back to a similar level of schedule inflexibility as I had once upon a time, but I hope that it takes a while. I hope that we get to relax for a little while in this pandemic waning moment before we all go back to having overly scheduled lives where we didn't have the flexibility or the freedom to just do what we wanted with friends and family at the drop of a hat.
Is there anything that you can imagine now in your life that you couldn't have imagined before?
Well, I've probably learned a lot about myself. I'm not sure all of it is good. As far as things that I can imagine now that I couldn't necessarily before, pre-COVID, the ability to travel for longer periods of time, because you don't have to take vacation the entire time, where it's more normal. You can go somewhere for 2-3 weeks for a month and not have to use up every bit of your vacation time that you might possibly have on one trip, because you can work from there, because it's normal now to work from somewhere that's not your office. Even if we're in our offices half of the time, most of the time, the idea of being somewhere else for a few weeks at a time and working half days will be fairly normal and much more accepted than it ever was before. This is also not specifically unique to me at all, but I have come to terms with the fact that while previously, prior to March of 2020, I would be in the office for 8-10 plus hours a day. And thinking back on that, how many of those hours were truly productive hours where I was really getting things done? It was certainly not all of them. And so the ability to get the same amount of things done in fewer hours, because there are, in some ways, fewer distractions, fewer colleagues, fewer meetings happening, that's also sort of appealing. The idea that some jobs, certainly not all jobs, many jobs remain tethered to timing. You have to be there for a certain number of hours. But some other jobs, such as the research-oriented one I have, if you get your stuff done, it doesn't really matter how long it takes you. And when we're all not sitting in the office, you don't get the good employee points for being in the office early and staying late. So as long as you're getting your stuff done, it doesn't matter if you can do it in 4 hours a day, if you're doing it well. That's appealing. One other thing that I have found very interesting about having these two jobs over the last year is that they're very different in a lot of ways. One is I got a lot of education to have it, and it's a lot of time sitting in front of a computer, and it is thought-based, and it's not based on the number of hours that I am sitting doing the job, but it's based on the output, the stuff that I get done. The other job that I've had is hourly. And so it doesn't matter if I'm being particularly productive. If we've got slow times, it doesn't matter. You're getting paid the same number of dollars per hour, no matter what you're doing during those hours. And so having these two different kinds of jobs and seeing not only the way that I react to them, but the way that others react to them. Some people are clearly there at the hourly jobs just to be there for that many hours and earn their paycheck, and they don't really care if they're productive during those hours. But some of us were highly productive in bursts, but then there'd be a slow period and we'd be twiddling our thumbs, but knowing that we were still getting paid even during the downtime. So having both an hourly job and a salaried job has been also pretty eye-opening, seeing how people live and work in a way that I did not have immediate direct connection to before.
Are there any specific takeaways to that that you're hoping that others would realize from your experience? You were fortunate slash crazy enough to do both of these jobs for so long with one another. Is there anything that you wish others would grasp from your experiences?
I think those who have the salaried type jobs that they could do from home, that they take for granted the ease of working in a lot of ways. It's not to say that those jobs are easy. There's a lot of thought. There's a lot of mental stimulation that goes on with those. And there can be an awful lot of frustration and a lot of challenges. But the hourly jobs where you have to be there at that hour, you cannot be late, and you have to be there until a certain hour and you can't leave early. And on the really lousy weather days, you're still working. When it's 13 degrees outside, you're still there. When it's raining, when it's really hot, you're still there. You're still having to get your stuff done. I think there's, for so many of us who have the office type jobs and are not the in-person hourly essential frontline kind of jobs, it's really easy to forget the grind that can come with the hourly jobs where you have to be there no matter what the situation. Sick time is not as much a thing. You have to be there through thick and thin, through good weather and bad weather. And that is harder in a lot of ways than sitting at your computer and doing work that is primarily mental.
No, I think that's a great point, and something that those of us that are in salaried work can lose sight of over the years, the further you get away from that type of work. Yeah, it's a great point. So, is there anything I didn't ask you that you would like to mention?
It's been a hell of a year. I thought several times, especially over the last 6 months or so, that this is not a year that I want to repeat. This is not a year that I would wish on anybody. This is a year where most things have been bad, but there have been glimpses of enjoyment in it. Some of the people that I have met, some of the moments that I have enjoyed, the times that I have felt extremely useful when I'm helping somebody, or when I'm actively calming somebody down, or when I'm explaining something to somebody and making their life just a smidge better in a year when everything is terrible, that I will look back on fondly. I will definitely look back on, for example, one of my colleagues at the testing site knew that I liked the hot chocolate mixes that were there, the little hot chocolate packets, but they would often, depending on how quickly you got to them, there weren't enough for everybody. So you had to be quick to get them. And if he got there before I did, he would grab two. And then he would always come and sneak one to me as dramatically as possible, as though we were doing some sort of a drug deal. He'd tell me, "I got the stuff." And he'd pass it off to me so that I would have a little hot chocolate packet. And thinking back on little moments like that make me smile. And there are a lot of little moments from the last year that will absolutely make me smile.
This was episode 2 of our 5th season with Catherine Cordham of Washington, D.C. Stay tuned for the following episode of Record of Change, when we'll hear from Blanca from Quito, Ecuador, for her second episode with us. If you like this episode or Record of Change in general, we would love to hear your feedback, even more so if you'd like to share it with your networks. Follow us on your favorite podcast provider, or on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, or our website, recordofchange.com. If you like supporting independent podcasts, we would be honored if you would support our efforts to bring you unique stories like this one from throughout the world through being a Patreon supporter. For those supporting us on Patreon, you'll have unique opportunities and access, like getting early access to episodes, bonus behind-the-scenes insights from the Record of Change team, and the opportunity to pitch questions for interviewees, alongside us, helping us make the show. Even the smallest level of support can be a great boost for us as we strive to document the impact of COVID-19 on communities throughout the world. This podcast is implemented with and by the members of the Bosch Alumni Network, a community that brings together former and current fellows, grantees, and staff members of the Robert Bosch Stiftung and its partners. Thank you for listening.